Hey, long time no see. Welcome to another episode of Strange Days Between You and Me. Welcome, Chuck. Welcome all. Let's go for a ride.
Are you gonna let me in? Hello. Hello.
'45 and the bell went off, thank God. Many people think I'm odd, but I talk with no one and I walk alone and I avoid sunlight with a chalky tone. I get home and don't say hi, it ain't no one there. I don't care, I walk in and go right up the stairs to my room, get in bed and just wait for dark, because that's when a real show starts. Tap, tap on a glass, go to piece of ass. So young and pretty, it's too bad she passed. But she comes to my room and we talk at night. She's demonic and bloody, but she holds me tight in my bedroom. With her, I'm never alone and I kiss her cold lips until the morning comes. And she gone, I can still hear her voice loom, but she only exists in the dark of my room. Love, I can't ignore you in my room. Do anything for you, lady. Love, I do adore you in my room.
Tap, tap on my ass.
Love, I can't ignore you
in my room.
Do anything for you, lady.
Tap, love,
I do adore you
in my room.
Tap, tap on my ass. I try to smile a lot, but I'm always fronting. But I do love a ghost, and at least that's something. She don't talk much, when she do it gets cold. Usually we just lay there when we hold each other. We're lovers, we don't need others. One of my mother's cats jumped up on the covers and it scared my baby, guess she don't like pets. So I twisted its fucking head off at the neck. Look baby, it's bloody, it's gone, it's doomed. Please, come back to the room, I'd do anything for thee. Don't ignore me, this is more than a sick love story. Without you, I'd bring a shotgun to school, and I will if you want me to. For any reason, I hate that you leave when the lights come on. And if I had it my way, the fucking sun would be gone.
Love,
I can't ignore you
in my room.
Do anything for you, lady.
Tap, love,
I do adore you
in my room.
Tap, tap on my ass.
Love,
I can't ignore you
in my room.
Do anything for you, lady.
Tap, love,
I do adore you
in my room.
Tap, tap on my ass.
Sometimes I kiss her, I start shaking. She slips me the tongue and it tastes like bacon. Uh-oh, something's wrong, baby's upset. She told me she was spotted by the neighbor's kid. She can't come back now cause they know our secret. Unless I can make them keep it. If I do, she may come to life. Now I'm in their yard with a shotgun and knife. Cut the screen, went in and found the kid. Blew a bowl of spaghetti in the side of his head. And the daddy was next, running down the hall. I shredded his throat and he was quick to fall. Tossed a Mossberg and gripped the knife. Started stabbing the shit out of his wife. Went home a bloody mess with a job well done. Wash up, wait for my baby to come.
Love,
I can't ignore you
in my room.
Do anything for you, lady.
Love,
I do adore you
in my room.
Tap, tap on my ass.
Love,
I can't ignore you
in my room.
Do anything for you, lady.
Tap, love,
I do adore you
in my room.
Tap, tap on my ass.
I waited 2 or 3 days, 4 days, waiting for the tap, tap like always. I waited and hated
that
I created a bloody mess.
Tap, tap.
I waited 2 or 3 months, 4 months, waiting for the tap, tap just for once. I waited and hated
that
I created a bloody mess.
Tap, tap.
I waited 2 or 3 days, 4 days, waiting for the tap, tap like always.
I never really paid much attention to the lyrics until then, and I must admit, it's quite horrific. It's not something I'd really like to play again, I don't think, after going through that experience, you know what I mean? That was horrific. There are several different versions of horrific, and that was one of them. There's no doubt about it. That's some deep shit, guys. Spaghetti on the wall and all these little other aspects. Nah, don't worry.
It was hard to know who was more crazy.
No more spaghetti on
me.
Seth Osman.
My life fades. The vision deepens. All that remains are memories. I remember.
Guys.
I remember the brave warrior, the man we called
Seth Osman.
To understand who he was, you have to go back to another time, when the world was powered by the black fuel, and the desert sprouted great cities of pipe and steel. mighty warrior cried like a roar, and touched with a blaze which engulfed them all. Without fuel they were nothing. They built a house of straw. The thundering machine sputtered and stopped. Their leaders talked and talked and talked. But nothing could stem the avalanche. Their world crumbled. The cities exploded. A whirlwind of looting. A firestorm of fear. Men began to feed on men. On the roads it was a white line nightmare. Only those mobile enough to scavenge, brutal enough to pillage, would survive.
So you see what happens is that I've got a dilemma, is that I played an intro song, but I actually listened to the words for a change. And it talks about spaghetti up against the wall, if you know what I mean. And it really put a bad taste in my mouth. A really, really bad taste. A woman we talk
at night. She's demonic and bloody, but she holds me tight in my bedroom. With her, I'm never alone. And I kiss her cold lips until the morning comes. And she gone. I can still hear her voice loom, but she only exists in the dark of my room. Love, I can't ignore you. In my room. Do anything for you. That love, I do adore you. In my room. Tap, tap. I can't ignore you. In my room. Do anything for you, baby. I do adore you. In my room. I try to smile a lot, but I'm always fronting. But I do love a ghost, and at least that's something. She don't talk much. When she do, it gets cold. Usually we just lay there.
Now, if you used SPC baked beans without spaghetti, it could have been a different story, but now this song's annoyed me, you know what I mean?
We hold each other, we're lovers, we don't need others. One of my mother's cats jumped up on the covers and it scared my baby. Guess she don't like pets, so I twisted its fucking head off at the neck. Look, baby, it's bloody, it's gone, it's doomed. Please, come back to the room, I'd do anything for thee. Don't ignore me, this is more than a sick love story. Without you, I'd bring a shotgun to school, and I will if you want me to. For any reason, I hate that you leave when the lights come on. And if I had it my way, the fucking sun would be gone. Love, I can't ignore you. In my room. Do anything for you, lady. Love, I do adore you. In my room.
Tap, tap, coming on. Ass.
Love, I can't ignore you.
In my room.
Do anything for you, lady.
Tap, tap,
love, I do adore you.
In my room.
Tap, tap, coming on.
Sometimes I kiss her, I start shaking. She slips me the tongue and it tastes like bacon. Uh-oh, something's wrong, baby's upset. She told me she was spotted by the neighbor's kid. She can't come back now cause they know our secret. Unless I can make them keep it. If I do, she may come to life. Now I'm in their yard with a shotgun and knife. Cut the screen, went in and found the kid. Blew a bowl of spaghetti in the side of his head. And the daddy was next, running down the hall.
See, that's the thing I can't tolerate, you know. He could have said baked beans, he could have said beef stroganoff, but he had to use spaghetti. And I think that's a very, very bad terminology, to be honest with you. Yeah, I wouldn't be using
it. It was hard to know who was more crazy. Me.
Or Sir Thosman.
My life fades. A vision deepens. All that remains. Our memories. I remember a time of chaos. Green dreams. This wasted land. But most of all, I remember the road warrior. The man we called
Sir Thosman.
To understand who he was, you have to go back to another time. When the world was powered by the black fuel. And the desert sprouted great cities of pipe and steel. Gone now, swept away. For reasons long forgotten, two mighty warrior tribes went to war and touched with a blaze which engulfed them all. Without fuel, they were nothing.
When Enlil, who's known as Yahweh, comes back and sees humans building a tower into the heavens in one of these cities, duplicating what the Anunnaki had built, he gets pissed off because he realizes, oh man, Enki got me. These people are too smart. So he destroys the tower. And he says, my seed shall not abide in man forever. His year shall be 120. And what's the maximum lifespan of a human being in the most pristine condition, according to Harvard? 120 years. Then the next thing he did was he separated humans and put them in different places around the planet, just like the tablets say. And then he confused the languages so that we couldn't communicate and collaborate anymore, which is why there's all these different crazy languages. And then on top of that, he put a brand. Whoever ruled over area, brand your people. We know that those are your people. Brand your people. We know those are your people. And look how it's worked. Look how...
Maybe Enlil was part of a segregational sort of community, you know.
And something I was
thinking that multiculturalism wasn't such a good idea. Maybe he's just like, whoops.
Have you ever?
I'm going.
There's the Monopoly game, which is controlled by the Federal Reserve, the private bank, which is actually controlled out of London, is manipulating all the dollars to put them out, put more and more people into debt. So the illusion of equity they have in real estate is coming apart. The players that are analyzing everything are expecting massive foreclosures next year in the beginning of what we call the recession.
Have you ever heard of the Rebbe?
No.
So this man started this sect of Orthodox Judaism. So this man was the rabbi. He became a mentor of Netanyahu, Israel's U.S. ambassador. In 1984, the Rebbe was speaking to Netanyahu, and he said, "Since we last met, many things have progressed. What hasn't changed, however, is that the Messiah still hasn't come. So do something to hasten his coming." A couple years later, he told Netanyahu that he would one day become prime minister of Israel and be the nation's last leader before handing the scepter to the Messiah. 2009, became prime minister and was elected out in 2021. But then a few months later, he was reinstated. This time, he fully aligned himself with the ultra-Orthodox and the Zionists. A lot of them are very anti-Palestinian, residing within Israel. If we're talking about the temple being rebuilt, the Muslims having claim of the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount, the Zionist Party wants that out of there. Netanyahu has definitely aligned himself with the Zionist Party.
And if it gets touched, war.
Yes.
The Hamashiach.
The great seven arrival. Anti-cancer foods. Unlock the power of food in your fight against cancer. Start with broccoli, a cruciferous veggie loaded with sulforaphane, a potent anti-cancer compound. Next, we have berries. Tasty fruits packed with antioxidants that fight cancer-causing oxidative damage and growth of cancer cells. A healthy diet isn't complete without garlic. Its active component, allicin, is believed to stop the spread of cancer cells. Meet turmeric, the golden spice. Curcumin, its active ingredient, is known to reduce the growth of cancer cells. Beans, a great source of fiber, can lower the risk of colorectal cancer. Include a variety in your meals today. Nuts, especially walnuts, contain phytochemicals that could protect against cancer. They're great for on-the-go snacking.
And are great for parasites as well.
Lastly, citrus fruits. The power of vitamin C and flavonoids can inhibit cancer cell growth and boost your immune system. Check out our other videos for more health tips.
I'm a man of tips, there's no doubt about it. I'll give you a tip. I'll give you a tilt of the hat.
To the U.S., Admiral Byrd's initial press report from Chile explained that his mission had to be aborted due to taking in too many casualties. The Chilean newspaper El Mercurio ran a March 5, 1947 article stating, "Admiral Byrd then declared that it was imperative for the United States to initiate immediate defense measures against hostile regions. The admiral further stated that he didn't want to frighten anyone unduly, but that it was a bitter reality that in case of a new war, the continental United States would be attacked by flying objects, which could fly from pole to pole at incredible speeds." Admiral Byrd repeated the above points of view, resulting from his personal knowledge gathered both at the North and South Poles before a news conference held for International News Service. Byrd arrived in America from his failed operation on April 14, 1947. Again, when he later testified before Congress, the admiral reiterated his alarming warning. "In case of a new war, the U.S. would be attacked by fighters that are able to fly from one pole to the other with incredible speed." Exactly what he meant is open to question. But what's clear is the advanced aeronautic technology his task force encountered makes space travel very conceivable, suggesting that he was either attacked by an alien force or an advanced German air superiority aided by extraterrestrials. Definitely, there can be no doubt that the German military in Antarctica had acquired advanced space-age technologies from an alien civilization or a hostile extraterrestrial force existed under the ice, or a joint combination of both, violently repelled the mighty American naval fleet. Byrd's enigmatic assertion leaves open the possibility that his opponent could navigate from pole to pole through a hollow Earth passageway, surmising that World War II would likely be eventually fought at the poles. National Geographic featured Byrd's high jump story entitled Our Navy Explores Antarctica in its October 1947 issue, but no sooner was it published, the U.S. government immediately pulled virtually every issue of the magazine from circulation. Coincidentally, in July that same year, the UFO crash in Roswell, New Mexico, was also quickly covered up, like Byrd's violently close encounter with ET technology at the South Pole. Roswell allowed reverse engineering to aid the Black Ops programs to begin developing their own anti-gravity spacecraft. A probable UFO crash in Germany's Bavaria in the summer of 1936 helped give the Nazis a full decade head start. According to an Admiral Byrd 1947 diary, the renowned polar explorer discovered an advanced ET civilization inhabiting a hollowed-out center of the Earth during an Arctic expedition dated February 19, 1947. Among the most incredible stories in history, for good reason, it's been ignored by the U.S. government but scooped up by Hollow Earth aficionados as their biblical proof. February 1947 must have been quite a year for the polar birdman. While during his well-documented Operation High Jump, the Admiral was getting his ass kicked by aliens or Nazis equipped with alien technology at the South Pole in February 1947. According to Byrd's secret diary, at the other end of the Earth's North Pole, he was also entering the magical alien world of Agartha for a sobering sight-down chat with the advanced civilization's master, warning him that if humans continue their evil, warlike ways, doom and gloom awaits.
Our interest rightly begins just after your race exploded the first atomic bombs over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan. It was that alarming time we sent our flying machines, the Flugelrads, to your surface world to investigate what your race had done. You see, we have never interfered before in your race's wars and barbarity. But now we must. For you have learned to tamper with a certain power that is not for your man, mainly that of atomic energy. Our emissaries have already delivered messages to the power of your world, and yet they do not heed.
Apparently, the government knew about Agartha before Byrd. According to the master, places such as Tibet, the Great Pyramid of Giza, and the North Pole all have tunnels leading to Agartha.
See, if Agartha's in the North Pole, that's the curious thing about it, is that there's actually a book where a guy and his son, they say they went into the inner Earth, up, I'm pretty sure it's up north that they're talking about at the moment, and it's a book, it's called The Smoky God. Very interesting read, actually. Yeah, 2 years stuck in the hollow Earth, so to speak.
What else did the master teach Byrd? What about the rest of the Operation High Jump crew? Byrd didn't uncover the underground world alone. Though it's highly unlikely that Admiral Byrd flew to the Hollow Earth from the North Pole in February 1947, supposedly on his final Antarctic expedition little more than a year before his death, the renowned American explorer is reported to have reached the South Polar opening during a January 1956 flight. Perhaps having contacted the advanced Hollow Earth race already on previous journeys to the poles, or minimally seen for himself, that warm green areas with ice-free lakes exist near and beyond the South Pole, and firsthand witnessed UFO battle capability. At the outset of his final trip to Antarctica in November 1955, Admiral Byrd stated, "This is the most important expedition in the history of the world." That's a pretty big statement. We can infer that he is drawing on his already amazing experiences flying over the poles, and most probably beyond. On February 5th, 1956, several weeks after his highly anticipated journey, Byrd announced on the radio to American media back home. On January L3, members of the United States expedition accomplished a flight of 2,700 miles from the base at McMurdo Sound, which is 400 miles west of the South Pole, and penetrated a land extent of 2,300 miles beyond the pole. If he actually traveled another 2,300 miles beyond the South Pole and not flown into the Hollow Rim opening, but kept flying on a straight course over Antarctica, Byrd and his crew would have nearly reached the middle of the Atlantic Ocean near the equator. And we know that didn't happen. So the most logical conclusion is the 2,300 miles beyond the South Pole must have taken his plane into the Earth's interior. On March 13th, the day he returned to America from his final polar expedition less than a year before his death, the great explorer referred to Antarctica as that enchanted continent in the sky, land of everlasting mystery. Ray Palmer, editor of Flying Saucer Magazine, responding to the preponderance of UFO sightings at the poles, concluded this about the pair of flights Admiral Byrd made over each pole. The flying saucers could come from these two unknown lands beyond the poles. It is the opinion of the editors of Flying Saucers magazine that the existence of these lands cannot be disproved by anyone, considering the facts of the two expeditions which we have outlined. Richard Evelyn Byrd's final diary entry is dated December 30th, 1956.
These last few years elapsed since 1947 have not been kind. I now make my final entry in this singular diary. In closing, I must state that I have faithfully kept this matter secret as directed all these years. It has been completely against my values of moral right. Now I seem to sense the long night coming on, and this secret will not die with me, but as all truth shall, it will triumph, and so it shall.
I've transcribed the smoky god probably about 1,000 show area, somewhere around there. I don't know if you can do a search and find it. But you can probably find it on, I'm not sure where I ripped it from. You might be able to get it on YouTube, Rumble, Brighteon, you know, one of those platforms. I'm sure it's still out there. But if you ever want the book, telegram me and I'll send you the PDF version of it as well. Yeah, trippy stuff, man.
This can be the only hope for mankind. I have seen the truth, and it has quickened my spirit and has set me free. I have done my duty toward the monstrous military-industrial complex. Now, the long night begins to approach, but there shall be no end. Just as the long night of the Arctic ends, the brilliant sunshine of truth shall come again, and those who are of darkness shall fall in its light. For I have seen that land beyond the pole, that center of the great unknown.
It's more than probable that the Admiral reached the Earth's inner core. His radio announcement was never followed up in the press because the government obviously suppressed any further publicity covering his wondrous discovery 2,300 miles beyond the pole. Obviously, from his final entry, he wanted to share everything about his spectacular travels and life-changing experiences. But by 1956, Washington was long committed to carrying out its sinister policy of secrecy, lies, and even murder to deprive Americans and all of humanity of the truth. Like President Eisenhower's prophetic warning in his 1961 farewell address, Byrd saw firsthand the monstrous military-industrial complex. If an intelligent civilization that only knows peace and compassion lives in the Earth's interior, and we were told the truth back then, it would have ended the Cold War and undoubtedly changed the fate of mankind forever. As an honest individual, Byrd must have suffered excruciating inner conflict and pain. Keeping what he knew secret from the rest of the world, it had to have eaten him up inside. Limited to speaking only in vague, lofty innuendo and unable to fully disclose what he'd seen, perhaps that literally did kill him, as the American hero died less than 2.5 months after his final diary entry. Yeah. And there is no...
Pretty bizarre stuff, guys, really, when you think about it. there's some weird stuff that we're not told, you know. It's a bit like anything, you know. It's a bit like the afterlife.
Florida Surgeon General.
The spirit realm, you know, people that can see auras, people that can't. You know, there's a lot of things that go around. There's no doubt about it. No doubt.
General says for us to stop getting the COVID vaccine.
Fox 35's Hannah McKenzie is joining us live in the Alert Center tonight. So, Hannah, he says what's in the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines is a problem.
Yeah, Luann, John, Florida Surgeon General Dr. Latipo says he has safety concerns pertaining to the discovery of billions of DNA fragments found per dose in the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines. And he says those concerns have not been addressed by the FDA or the CDC. Dr. Latipo says if the risks of DNA integration with COVID vaccines cannot be addressed, then the vaccines aren't appropriate for use in humans. He says he sent letters to the heads of the FDA and the CDC specifically questioning how this would impact humans in three main areas: healthy human genes being transformed into cancerous cells, chromosomal instability, and how the integration could affect unintended parts of the body, such as the heart, brain, lungs, even the injection site itself. We asked local doctor Michael Sparks to weigh in. Dr. Sparks telling us with the state surgeon general saying one thing and the FDA another, health providers are left stuck in the middle.
You know, new things are scary. If we look back historically, we've introduced new medications that we were told were very safe, were going to be very effective, and they turned out not to be safe or effective, and they caused a lot of birth defects, things like that. So it's not unreasonable to be worried about things that are new. And that's where the research comes into play. There have been so many millions of doses of this vaccine delivered.
I often wonder about back in, I remember in the, I think the late 60s, you might remember this if you're still in the room. I don't. Oh, you might be there, Sue. About like DDT, you know. Like they used to spray it everywhere, like pools and down the streets. And you don't know, eh? Like now you look back on it, it was virtually like an Agent Orange sort of thing, you know. But back in the day, I don't know how you could feel that that was legitimate. There'd be spraying yourself with gases. I don't know how that works, but it was just a normal occurrence, you know. Yeah, it's amazing all these things, you know, like aspartame, when that come in, another thing. You really got to think about all these, you know, chemicals and all that, I guess, over time, you know, like full research, or they just brought onto the public. And, you know, aspartame, that's the sad thing about people on diets, you know. They go, sugar-free, oh, yeah, aspartame-riddled. And they end up with all these bloody neurological problems, you know. It's really, that's a really sad state of affairs. Fluoride in the water when you don't need it. There's no health, there's no regulation. How can you just pump anything, whether it's fluoride or Prozac or whatever? You can't just say, well, the society is getting a little bit restless, so let's pump in 10 milligrams of fluoride per liter of water. And it's like, well, Bob drinks like 10 liters of water a day and Bill drinks too. Like, there's no regulation. It should be absolutely outlawed. It's just incredible. This world is absolutely incredible. Everything should be through choice, and that's it. Yep. Yeah, everything, you know.
Though, that if we were to expect to see some of these, you know, theoretical problems, we should start seeing them. There have been so many millions of doses of this vaccine delivered, though, that if we were to expect to see some of these, you know, theoretical problems, we should start seeing them.
I'm Angus Dalgleish. I'm a professor of oncology at St. George's, a consultant medical oncologist. And I have started to notice that several of my patients with melanoma who've been stable, stage 4 disease, they've had very good immunotherapy or other treatments, and I've been reviewing them from 5 to 20 years, I've noticed that I have now over 6, possibly 7, even an 8th yesterday, who've clearly relapsed following the booster vaccine. At first, we didn't put the two together. But when patients said, I felt awful since the vaccine, I've just been drained, they described symptoms of like a long COVID. And the next thing we know, 2-3 weeks, a couple of months later, they've got clear evidence of relapse. And these relapses are quite aggressive. They're not a gentle relapse. They're relapses that are requiring systemic therapy as opposed to a little nodule that requires surgical excision. But it's not just this. I'm now very much aware in my own circle of many people who are having, they haven't got melanoma, but they've never had anything before, but they've got lumps and bumps and they're not feeling well. And two people I've interviewed at great length, they all put it down to feeling awful after their booster. They were fine with the first two vaccines or just had shivers, flu, etc. But they've described being very tired, very fatigued, wanted to stay in bed. And this has dragged on to the point where they've gone to the doctor and they've had blood counts and investigations. And I now know seven of them. Two of them have leukemias and the others have lymphomas. And one of them has a very bad myeloma, which he was absolutely sure was instigated by the booster as he developed the dreadful symptoms. So I want to bring to everybody's attention that I think that this does not look like a coincidence to me. And we need to join forces.
I don't know if he goes into it by the end of it, but I think it seems to be something to do with the coating of the spike protein. It's a bit like when you're trying to cultivate a so-called virus, is just virtually toxins coming out of a cell. It's like you're finding the firefighters or the people coming out of the fire. It's halfway between the cells eradicating things, getting things sorted out, because they bought up on what's his name? The dude that made the PCR test, you know, he already said it shouldn't even be made for that. That's just junk DNA, you know, pretty much. And if you do the threshold, you're going to get a positive. Yeah, of course, especially when you're mixing it with all sorts of crazy shit. But yeah, man, I guess this is the world, you know. We can only go by our own judgments and bloody thoughts on these things, you know. I know where I stand on the whole situation, and that's it, you know. I mean, if you're encasing your cells with a... what they call it, shit, I forgot the name of the bleeding. Anyway, you're encouraging your cells pretty much, so you're suppressing release. It's a bit like, I guess, when someone's got a runny nose and congestion, you know, probably what we do for ease in the immediate time is that we have a congestion sort of medication to help us, you know, be relieved and we're not coughing and carrying on. Where really our body needs to express that. So it's like a mRNA sort of coating on the gene of your cell, you know. And it's not allowing the cell to express itself. And, you know, like with the electrical magnetic fields these days, you know, it's a high possibility that our cells would be wanting to express ourselves as well, which was the weirdest thing when they brought out the 5G at the same time and everyone's like, it's like, okay. Could there be an electrical magnetic field apparatus going on here that's dropping people like that, you know, spin me around or what have you? Yeah, it's a big bloody rabbit hole, there's no doubt about it. One big rabbit hole.
And see if this is a real effect. And if it is, we must stop all the boosters immediately. Thank you.
If the media was legitimate, they would be talking about one of the biggest crises that's happening in this country right now, which is a massive increase in all-cause mortality.
Yeah.
It's a massive increase, and they're completely silent on it. It's like in some age groups, it's a 40%+ increase in all-cause mortality, heart attacks, strokes, cancer. gee, what do you think happened that changed where all of a sudden there's this massive increase and it coincides with something else? Don't you think maybe they would investigate that? Don't you think that like you would have some sort of investigative reporter that dives deep into this and gets to the bottom of it? No, they can't because of what
captured.
You said.
They're
because
captured. They're captured. They're totally captured, 100%.
Imagine a digital single payment solution that could be used for any kind of payment throughout the euro area. Guess what? It could become a reality. A digital euro. Easy, safe, fast, reliable. Digital money from the European Central Bank at your fingertips whenever you need it. But how would it work? Say you've gone for a meal with a friend and you want to split the bill. Simple. Open the digital euro wallet on your smartphone, check your balance, enter the amount to pay your friend, confirm your transfer.
Just simple, guys. Just simple. I love how they do these sort of mannerisms on these, you know. Oh, look, what a great transition.
Your friend will receive the money instantly, free of charge. It doesn't matter which country you're in or who your payment provider is. Payments are still made instantly, even offline. It's all.
I must admit, after knowing their tactics and that, listen to this, it is truly pathetic. It is disgustingly pathetic. It sounds so fake. It sounds so stupid. It is just weird that. Is this how we talk to everyone every day, do we? Just one. Get out of here. Just get out of here.
So easy to use the digital euro at your favorite local shops. Unlock your device, place it on the terminal, authenticate, make the payment online or offline. If you want, you can also use a physical card. What about e-commerce? The digital euro is also available when you're buying something online. Be it digital or physical, a euro will always be a euro and have the same value irrespective of format. Let's embrace the digital era with the digital euro.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Let's embrace. I love their words. Man, I think I've mastered the art of working out a salesperson, if you know what I mean. After all these years of listening to bullshit after bullshit, there's so many sale pitches. Let's embrace. Together we are one. It's like, get out of here.
In Singapore, we already have the situation. Mm-hmm. No cash. Cashless society. It's ready to go.
And a cashless society is the most important facet, the most important controlling facet of this new world economic order. Remember now, we have three facets to this new world order enslaving government. We have the new world order, the political part of it. We have the new world economic order, which is the enslaving economic part of it in a cashless society. And as well as that, we have the religious order, meaning the new age movement that we discussed previously. So this magazine now is...
And let's not forget Revelations, what was that, 28, 30, I forgot it. Anyway, let's not forget Big Pharma, technocracy of the pharmaceutical industry of the petrodollar / child slavery and all these other aspects. Yeah, one big happy club, guys. There's no doubt.
A magazine published by a sub-organization of the Illuminati. The Futurist is a magazine designed to condition us to their plan that is coming. And in this one particular issue, you'll notice here that there's a symbol on the front. It looks like a dollar symbol, and you may not see that it's really an electronic circuit, meaning that the new money that's coming, and they say that here, is electronic money, not paper money, not coin money, but credits and debits, electronic funds transfer in a cashless society, not just in the United States, but globally. Now, notice on one of the prime articles here, it talks about a cash-free society. In other words, folks, there is a plan to take the entire globe cashless according to information I've gleaned from research.
Do you know what I find interesting, you know? I can see the Third World War coming, there's no doubt about it, very soon. But I think one of the most funniest things would be watching the Fourth World War, where we're all just bashing each other with clubs and sticks and freaking all sorts of crazy stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's where the funny times come in, you know what I mean? That's where the real funny times come in.
It is important to understand that 432 hertz refers to the number of vibrations per second, and 1 second is a rather arbitrary unit. But how come...
There was a battalion back in the, I think it was the Second World War, they were from New Zealand, and they hadn't supplied them with enough, and they literally were fighting, I think it had come down nearly on both sides, that had virtually turned into picking up stones and murdering each other on either side. It became so brutal because they'd all run out of bullets. I'm not sure where that was, I know it was sort of on an island somewhere, but I'm not sure what had happened. It might have been in Gallipoli. And it was a New Zealand and Australian, I think, but I think they were mainly New Zealand, and they didn't give them enough bullets. So they had to go to virtually full-on freaking rock warfare, man. Brutal shit. Absolute brutal.
1 second is 1 second. Originally, from ancient times until the Middle Ages, an hour was divided into 2, 3, 4 or 12 equal parts. It is said that the Rockefeller Foundation had an interest in ensuring that the United States adopted the 440 hertz standard in 1935 as part of the war on consciousness, leading to control of the musical cult. This theory says that tuning all the music in the world to 440 hertz turns it into a weapon of war. Is this so? There are many serious studies confirming the destructive influence of the 440 hertz frequency on humanity. There are those who dispute the theory, but are they convincing enough or just a handful of dust in the eyes? We are about to find out in this video.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation about the 440. I've done quite a few bits of shows here and there over the years about the 440, 432 hertz, the in the key of A, and then the key of C with the 528, I think, resonance of the earth, you know, and all these other aspects. I find these things really fascinating, you know, and there seems to have been some sort of shenanigans going on for sure.
The A key is the musical key that represents...
I mean, if you go back to the... What really resonates with me with these sort of theories, and that if you go back to ancient, say, like, how far back can you go with sound? Tibet, I guess, would be a pretty close, you know, home and all this sort of, you know, crazy stuff with sounds. There's, out of all the tribes or people on Earth, I guess, yeah it'd be pretty hard up to get past Tibet too much. But these lads and all that over there, you know, they're doing a certain you know. And to me, in my studies, this proves that the 432 hertz and everything keyed to that, 528s and all that sort of six. I don't know, if sometimes 526 comes up, but that's around the key of C. That might be a lower vibration of C or something that happens. I don't know. And then you go on to all the other keys throughout the, you know, the keys. But I think if you listen to Tibet, that is really interesting. And another one that resonates is the sound of bees. There's been some major studies on people finding freaking like, you know, it put the sound of bees in your background. And it would really, really improve your health. I'm a big believer, whether it's plants or myself, on all these sort of aspects of bloody, vibrations and sounds, you know. So, yeah, man,
crazy stuff.
And the starting point for tuning musical instruments. A device called a tuning fork always picks up the atone in the same way, but it arose only in 1711. How then were musical instruments tuned before then? The answer is that the musicians used their ears. They tuned the notes to each other and the instruments to each other. They knew the pitches or the frequencies without even having that scientific knowledge, and which ones sounded good to them together. After all, many early works use a gland frequency of up to 432 Hz for the atone, tuned just by feel. Interesting, isn't it? However, how does the change from 432 Hz to 440 Hz allegedly affect people? It is said that as a result of it, people begin to think and feel in a certain way. They plunge into inner chaos. In 1953, Goebbels' decree was approved by the International Organization for Standardization, ISO. A change was made and 440 Hz was introduced as the standard, despite the protests of Professor Dussault of the Paris Conservatoire, who wrote a referendum signed by 23,000 French musicians. They have insisted that the tuning frequency of the latone of 432 Hz...
Did you hear that? 23,000 other protests against this change, guys. 23 would be like amazing, wouldn't it? Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Not be changed in order to preserve musical harmony and the musical vibration of the universe. According to the conspiracy theory, the LA tone tuned to 432 Hz was quite deliberately hidden from the world, because this is the point of balance in nature. 432 Hz is a vibration represented in the principle of the golden ratio.
Could you imagine a protest against anything or a stand against anything on that sort of a level? 23,000. I mean, think about it. That's just people that play music. Not scientists, you know, not bloody theologists and all that. Just music people all saying the same thing. It's pretty incredible, man.
Also known as the golden ratio or divine proportion, and unites the properties of light, time, space, matter, gravity and magnetism to biology, the DNA code and consciousness. The natural tuning of 432 Hz has profound effects on consciousness at the cellular level in our body. By tuning musical instruments and using them at 432 Hz, instead of 440 Hz, atoms and DNA begin to resonate in harmony with the spiral of the golden ratio in nature, shares Brian T. Collins. The simplest explanation is found in the argument that a note has 12 harmonics because it resonates with 12 notes of the musical scale with the middle and sustained tones. These 12 harmonics are present when a note is tuned to 432 Hz. Music tuned to 440 Hz is said to be much poorer. The frequency of planet Earth is 8 Hz. Alpha waves, the frequency of the brain in a relaxed state, are also waves with a frequency of 8 Hz. But when we listen to music tuned to 440 Hz, it makes this fundamental 8 Hz change to 8.25 Hz, which means that the harmonics generated are out of harmony with the planet. Humans vibrate in the frequency range of 16 to 32 Hz, which is equivalent to the musical scale from low C to high C, or one octave. The setting of 440 Hz is not harmonic with the frequency of the human being, because the fundamental becomes 16.5. When we listen to music at 440 Hz, the first thing we notice is lethargy, tiredness, a desire to do nothing. And this happens because the harmonics of this music do not correspond to a person's vibrational frequency. Archaic Egyptian instruments that have been discovered so far are mostly tuned to 432 hertz. Music is vibration, energy. Each person's voice has its own sound frequency. Thoughts are also waves that are filled with either harmony or dissonance. For centuries, Indian philosophers have been treating and maintaining people's health with the help of speech. In the book, The Secret Power of Music, David Tyne claims that there is not a single function in the human body that is not subject to music. Research shows that music affects digestion, internal secretion, blood circulation, nutrition, breathing, etc. It affects the body in two ways, with a direct effect, that is, influence of sound on cells and organs, and indirectly, through the impact on emotions, which in turn influence many processes in the human body. Another theory states that our subconscious, our organism understands that the frequency of 432 hertz is an awakening, an opening of the heart center of love, harmony, and joy. It is called the frequency of the universe. And 440 hertz is a mental level, the level of the ego, of control, fear, and power. We can also hear that music with a frequency of 432 hertz soothes, sounds clear and pleasant to the ear, positively affects the chakras, expands the feelings through the heart chakra, and accelerates our spiritual growth. Archaic Egyptian instruments have been found that were tuned to a frequency of 432 hertz. In ancient Greece, musical instruments were also mostly tuned to 432 hertz, as were the instruments of Orpheus. Plato, Hippocrates, Aristotle, Pythagoras, and other great thinkers and philosophers of antiquity possessed invaluable knowledge about the healing effect of music on man and cured many diseases precisely with the power of music. Recently, the American mathematician and historian Jay Kennedy, who works at the University of Manchester in Great Britain, announced that he had discovered the secret code hidden in the works of Plato. Kennedy argues that Plato shared the Pythagorean notions of the music of the spheres as the musical harmony of the universe and built his works on the laws of musical harmony. These original sound frequencies were also used in ancient Gregorian chants, such as the Great Hymn of St. John the Baptist. According to church authorities, they were lost many centuries ago. These powerful frequencies were discovered by Dr. Joseph Pulio and described in Dr. Leonard Horwitz's book, The Healing Codes for Biological Apocalypse. Here are the healing codes of the notes in the tonal scale according to this theory. Up to 396 hertz, freedom from guilt and fear. 417 hertz, erases traumatic experiences and facilitates change. 528 hertz, can bring about beautiful transformation and miracles in life, DNA restoration, resonates with the human body and nature. 639 improves and strengthens relationships with others. 741 hertz, awakening intuition, provides the power of self-expression, cleanses toxins at the cellular level. 852 hertz, return to spiritual order. The frequency of 432 hertz is obtained in an interesting way. 24 hours times 60 minutes times 60 seconds equals 86,000. 400 divided by 2 equals 43,200. It is here, however, that the theory loses ground and is contested. From another theory that argues that arguments for numerical or mystical properties of the number 432 are untenable. It is important to understand that 432 hertz refers to the number of vibrations per second, and 1 second is a rather arbitrary unit. But how come 1 second is 1 second? Originally, from ancient times until the Middle Ages, an hour was divided into 2, 3, 4 or 12 equal parts, but never into 60, so that even the concept of a minute did not exist. Fractions of a minute were not used at all, because there were no devices that could measure such short periods of time. If we had stuck with dividing everything into 12 parts, a second could be 1/12 of a minute, or perhaps 1 divided by 1728 of an hour. 1728 equals 12 times 12 times 12, which would give a completely different numerical value for the same frequency. This leads to the conclusion that the current definition is just a coincidence. The practice of dividing a minute into 60 smaller segments did not appear until the 16th century. And even then, different clocks measured at slightly different speeds. To standardize the measurement of time, people define units of time by taking an average of the length of a day, which is some fraction of a year, which they then measure as the time it takes the Earth to rotate on its axis relative to the Sun. The first clocks that could track seconds more accurately over longer periods were not constructed until the 18th century. However, here we come to an even bigger but. In the 1940s, scientists discovered that the Earth's rotation rate was not constant, and the second was eventually redefined as the duration of the 9,192,631,770 radiation periods corresponding to the transition between the two hyperfine levels of the ground state of the cesium-133 atom. Here the theory mockingly concludes that 432 Hz is clearly the divine tuning of nature itself, which is ultimately defined as one vibration for some periods of emission of some chemical element. Continuing the theory, it is said that in Bach's era, there was no standardized way of tuning instruments. The same piece could sound much higher or lower depending on where and when it was performed. The pitch of musical instruments changes over time, even due to heat and mechanical wear. So until the tuning fork was invented in 1711, there was no way to make adjustments, so that there was harmony between different regions, and even performances in one region. However, even after the invention of the tuning fork, there was no single standardized tuning. The relationship between the thickness of the string and its tension is also added. The higher the tension, the higher the sound, and the thicker the string, the lower the sound. This is why the double bass has huge thick strings while the violin has thin strings. It turns out that strings sound better up to a certain point when their tension is higher. However, the supply of thicker strings was not so easy in the 19th century. Making strings was a complicated procedure, so instead of changing the manufacturing process, it was much easier to tune the same strings to higher levels to increase the tension and thus improve the sound. Orchestras, competing with each other for better sound, began to tune their instruments higher and higher. This eventually led to problems for the singers. The theory goes that, at the insistence of singers, the French government made the 435 Hz tuning officially standard in France in 1859, and many orchestras and opera houses in Europe adopted this standard. In Great Britain, however, the French standard was misinterpreted. It was understood to be relative to a certain temperature, which is why British orchestras usually tuned to 439 Hz. In 1939, there was an international conference held in London, which resulted in the recommendation that 440 Hz be used as a compromise between the various tuning systems in use at the time, some of which went above 450 Hz. Eventually, in 1955, the 440 Hz standard was adopted by the International Organization for Standardization, ISO. Virtually all commercially produced modern music today is tuned to 440 Hz. However, some symphony orchestras ignore the standard and tune to 441 442 or 443 Hz. While orchestras specializing in older music may sometimes use a tuning close to that for which the piece was written, which can range from 415 Hz to 470 Hz. Having laid out the facts on both sides of the argument, we would be very interested to know what your opinion is on the matter. Is the frequency of 440 Hz a manipulation, or just a standard with which music already sounds the same all over the world?
They built a house of straw, the thunder, the shears, and